Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Wednesday, September 4th, 2019, regular session of the Springfield Planning Commission. I hereby call it over, the regular session. Attendance, chair is here. The vice chair continues recused on this discussion, so I guess he's not going to come in. Commissioner Vogt?
Here.
Commissioner Landon?
Here.
Commissioner Bergen? Will be late. Commissioner Gill?
Present.
And Commissioner McGinley?
Present.
Okay, if we'd all rise, I'll ask Commissioner Gill to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Do we have any adjustments to the regular session agenda? Hearing none. Is there any business from the audience that does not relate to this evening's agenda? Hearing none. We're ready to go into deliberations.
Grace will be here.
Three separate appeals, and I believe we're going to open all three of them at the same time so we can, since it's one project really, we're going to open all three appeals to discuss, so we don't have to worry about whether we're speaking at the correct time or not. So the first one is a Type 2 Director's Land Use Decision authorizing issuance of a tree felling permit for publicly owned property within Glenwood, Journal Number 811-19-102 TYP3. We're also going to open the discussion of appeal of Type 2 Director's Land Use Decision authorizing issuance of hillside development permit for publicly owned property within Glenwood, Journal Number 811-19-128 TYP3. And the appeal for Type 2 Director's Land Use Decision approving with conditions a tentative site plan for a publicly owned property within Glenwood, Journal Number 811-19-129 TYP3. And at that point, do we have instructions from our city attorney?
You'll just need to declare any ex parte contacts that you've had between your last meeting and now, or if you have any undisclosed from prior to that. And then if you have any new conflicts of interest or bias, you can address that at this time.
Declarations?
None.
No one has any issues with ex parte or conflict of interest. We're ready for a staff presentation, I guess in whichever order you care to take them. Andy Liber.
I'm going to be really brief. Due to circumstances of timing and records being held open, you now have before you all three of the related applications for this project. And to be clear, the scope of this is for the properties that are within the city limits, and that's a fraction of the overall site area. It's predominantly the electric system substation and a portion of the maintenance access road, and a very small segment of the power lines that extends eastward. The majority of the project associated with the transmission lines is under the purview and the jurisdiction of the hearings official. That decision is being made by the hearings official separately. So the scope of the Planning Commission's decisions in this matter relate to tree removal associated with the existing project site off of the extension of East 22nd Avenue. There's a fractional amount of trees compared to the overall tree felling count that was tabulated for this project associated with this particular site. As well, the transmission line corridor begins along the I-5, near the I-5 right-of-way, extends eastward. Only about 10% or less of the site contains those transmission lines. So just wanted to clarify the scope and what the ask is of the Planning Commission. None of the site area associated with the actual substation was determined to be in Hillside. The only portion is a very small segment of the maintenance access road that begins to descend into the lower river, I guess down the hillside. That's where it exits the city limits, so there's a very small piece of, arguably, of hillside area that would be associated with this application under the Planning Commission's jurisdiction. So the prevailing and I guess the biggest review component is the actual site plan for this electric system substation, which is associated with the access, with the frontage, with the landscaping, stormwater management, and that sort of thing. So staff does note that there were conditions attached to that site plan decision. Staff maintains that those conditions are appropriate. They are achievable. Some have actually already been met due to this delay. Some of the required elements, which include a property line adjustment, have already been affected. And so there is no intervening piece of property owned by a third party. It's all owned by Sub now, from the substation site all the way to the E-Web intertie, which is on the eastern side where the existing power lines are. Again, the majority of that being under the hearings officials' jurisdiction. So I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them. I would encourage you to utilize the aspects of all three of these applications, because they are essentially contingent on full approval of all three for this project to proceed. There are interrelated conditions that require the issuance of permits associated with the other two prior to this one being approved, and so on. So they're intertwined, inextricably linked, so to speak. And so I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have as you begin your deliberations.
First of all, I'd like to go ahead and mention that Commissioner Bergen's entered, and so she is now present, and we already asked the question about conflict of interest and ex parte, so I'd like to go ahead and ask you.
No conflicts of interest, no ex parte contacts.
Thank you very much. Discussions?
I have visuals if it helps. I did bring the previous PowerPoints, which will be already on the record. I don't know, I'm assuming that that's allowable. If you wanted to see the map of the project area or the actual site plans to determine the context of the proposed development and how it affects the three approvals, because they were initially approved for the entire project area, and so this scope has been restricted in the city limits area, so it is somewhat, I guess, you know, it's only a portion of the overall approval that was originally issued by the director is associated with the Planning Commission's jurisdiction this evening. Would be helpful. I don't know if you want me to bring up any of the property area maps or anything that can do that.
I think we've probably all taken a look at the mapping. I had a question originally for the city attorney regarding IBM and herbicide use, and were you able to come up with an answer?
So the evidence in the August 13th submittal from the appellant, from Hutchinson Cox, talked a lot about glyphosate, which is an herbicide. And there were some questions at the public hearing about herbicide use, and there was a reference to the herbicide in prior documents that were submitted before the public hearing. However, the information about glyphosate was submitted during the response period, and when you opened that response period for the tree felling permit, you specifically opened that for a testimony and evidence submitted into the record after your public hearing in that 1 week period. And so that was an issue that they could have brought that evidence in between June 18th and July 2nd, but instead they brought it in during the 1 week of response to that. And so my recommendation, I can't tell you that you're not going to consider it, you have to reject it as evidence, but my recommendation to you is that you not consider any of the arguments specific to glyphosate that were raised on August 13th.
Okay, that's understood. Regarding the integrated vegetation and integrated pest management, I'm really surprised that the integrated pest management is not sub's default position in 2019. It is mentioned in the vegetated stormwater facilities, but to see that it's not really specified as part of general operation procedures to me is quite surprising for a public agency. Wanted to go ahead and say that Lane County roads are maintained using IPM, and that's certainly much larger and much more complex vegetated management from the coast to the Cascades. So I wish that SUB would begin to investigate that and treat that a little more seriously when we continue to find problems with herbicides, which I've mentioned before in the past, and I won't mention the specific one because I do understand the rules of evidence in regard to that. Another couple of questions that I came up with, I guess I'm going to call these in the tree felling, is I've noticed that the site has a considerable number of dead or dying Douglas firs on it. You can see them as you drive down McVeigh Highway. And I wonder if there's any kind of consideration, there's been any kind of thought regarding what is going to happen to those. The process is to put this drought-resistant grass down where trees have been, which I think is somewhat of a fire hazard to start off with. And then if we've got all these standing dead Doug firs with lots of dead limbs on them, I mean, they look like dog hair in a lot of spots. And I'm wondering if there's any thought as to a way to look at those to see if we can maintain some wildlife habitat, but at the same time reduce the fire danger. The third item I have on the tree felling is I believe that it's a degradation of habitat there. Some of the statements from the Metro Plan under Goal 5 for Habitat say to carefully manage, protect wildlife, develop values harmonious with natural settings, maintain quality of life through site planning, natural features and vegetation, and says that natural vegetation shall be protected and maintained to the greatest extent practical and enhanced by landscape. So that's what I had. Oh, one other thing in regard to, I guess this may be the site plan, but it probably also relates to all three, is that even though the application says that the street is primarily industrial, from Henderson Avenue, I believe is the name of the street, eastward, it's an undeveloped, I'd call it a residential street, is what it looks like to me. There is the businesses at the end, but it does look like to me more like a residential street. So that's what I had in regard to the tree felling.
Can I give some context on, because this is a quasi-judicial permit application, mm-hmm. it's slightly different than the quasi-judicial plan amendment and zone change applications that you've been hearing a lot of lately. And so in this case, Metro Plan policies are only applicable criteria of approval if they on their face say they're applicable to this type of permit or this type of development. So there are broad policies that favor certain types of, like you cited from Goal 5 policies, so those sort of are very broad and apply to if the city were amending its code or if you were considering a plan amendment or zone change. Mm-hmm. But that is not the type of Metro Plan policy that is applicable approval criteria for this application directly.
Thank you.
Just to give that clarity, this is a permit decision, and so it's slightly different scope of what can be approval criteria than plan amendments or code amendments.
Another point I wanted to make is when we met with the hearings officials before, that we actually requested them to continue in joint deliberations with us. And I just wanted to go ahead and express my disappointment that we're not doing that collegially this evening, and that the hearings officials have apparently made their decisions at this point on the matters. And we won't know what those decisions are until, so we can't be informed or speak to them about their decisions until after we've made our own.
Okay. Correct, and we can, I think we can relay that information to them. I don't think that it's been past practice to deliberate jointly. I think the Springfield hearings official for a long time has held a public hearing and then written their order and findings out of a public deliberative setting, which is a different approach than the Planning Commission as a body of multiple people takes. And then also the city pays the hearings official for, by the minute and for the hour, and so it could also be a cost savings measure not to have that. Versus that didn't direct them not to appear.
It's not generally that we do have a joint meeting with them, however, for any purposes. So we're basically writing, sort of cutting new territory right at the moment. So I just wanted to say that, you know, we did request to have joint deliberations.
And that may have been achievable had the one item not been further delayed. Mm-hmm. And I guess staff accepts responsibility for the scheduling miscommunication that resulted in the order, the record being reopened. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, essentially they were then able to obtain the information they needed to conclude their decision outside of this meeting. And so the scheduling of the Planning Commission was such that they went forward with, you know, completing their assignment, so to speak, and issuing the decision, and there wasn't an opportunity to convene with the Planning Commission for joint deliberations. I guess specifically on the tree felling, that may have been the best opportunity, but since it was delayed, they went ahead and issued their decision without the joint deliberation.
Commissioner McGinn.
I have a question for Christina. So I just opened up the tree felling permit application form. And on the fifth page, criteria B is whether the proposed felling is consistent with state standards, metro plan policies, and city ordinances and provisions affecting the environmental quality of the area. Then it continues. So because here it specifies metro plan policies affecting the environmental quality of the area, would we then consider goal 5?
The case law on this point says that no matter how broad sort of a catch-all must be consistent with comprehensive plan policy statement and your criteria of approval is, those plan policies still have to be specifically identified as criteria of approval for the type of decision that you're making. And so there's some interpretive flexibility, but the one that Commissioner Coyle cited is definitely too broad to be an applicable approval criteria for this application.
Thank you.
In my opinion.
Thank you. Further questions? Hearing none. Are there any additional conditions of approval that anyone would like to discuss? Commissioner Gill.
I would like to bring up the idea. So there is the possibility of criteria that removed trees could be replaced, and I understand that in the plans, it doesn't make sense to replace the same location, but it is a big site. The challenge here is the part that we get to talk about is smaller and fewer trees, but there are trees being removed. And I remember during, and I could not, I looked back in my notes, I can't remember which hearing it was, I didn't go listen to all of it, but there was a point where Sub said they were willing to do some additional tree planting in different areas. And so I'd like to consider that, since that is something that is in tree felling permits, is the replacement of lost trees. And they were open to that at that point. So that's the only one I have otherwise.
Yeah, I started bringing that up myself at one meeting, and I've come up with what I call a planting mitigation plan, which I forward to Andy Lindbergh, which would be planting additional trees in various areas of the site. I don't know if it's proper to discuss that within our purview here. Looking for a legal opinion.
Yeah, so you can discuss any conditions of approval that are related to criteria of approval. So if you can identify the criteria of approval that you think hasn't been met by the director's decision, and then how that criteria of approval allows the application to meet that. Or how the condition allows the application to meet the criteria of approval.
And according to your interpretation of goal 5, since goal 5 is not directly cited,
correct,
I can't bring forth any discussions of the environment or habitat.
Right, it would have to be those that are specifically regarding, like, call out as a criteria of approval for site development or tree felling permits.
Ms. Sharon?
Since on the application, the metro plan, or meeting the requirements of the metro plan is laid out, what part, because I don't have a search function on my iPod, or my iPad, I apologize, but what part of the metro plan specifically addresses the tree felling permits?
I'm not aware of those as applicable, that there are any policies that are applicable for criteria of approval. I would look to Andy. I don't think that any have been raised at this point. I think what there have been, like, for example, on the transmission line portion of the Glenwood Refinement Plan area, which is outside the city limits and not under your purview, but for example, there are very specific policies there about siting of transmission lines and environmental policies that have to be considered in making those decisions. So that's an example of a specific metro plan policy that it must be consistent with. And we haven't identified any of those environment, but there are any specific environmental policies that apply to this particular tree felling permit that would be found in the metro plan or refinement plans more broadly.
Thank you.
Okay. So being that we cannot develop a mitigation planting plan, apparently.
Can I ask is, I mean, so looking at the criteria, could it be under E, whether the applicant's proposed replanting of new trees or vegetation is an adequate substitute for the trees to be felled?
That's a criteria of approval. It's applicable, and it's your determination what's adequate.
Okay, well, I did come up with a suggested wildlife impact mitigation and planting plan. And I'd be happy to bring that forward as a proposed condition of approval for the Planning Commission to consider. Seeing no objections, I thought that a reasonable wildlife impact mitigation and planting plan would be developed so that 100 trees, 1-inch diameter or greater, would be planted in areas of the site that will not interfere with access or line safety. That 150 shrubs, 1 gallon size or greater, shall be planted in the same areas. That trees and shrubs in 1 and 2 above should be fire and deer resistant. Native species that have some wildlife-friendly characteristics, for example, being evergreen, providing cover or food for wildlife species, or all of the above. And that I also asked for, and this was brought up earlier, installation at 5 areas of 5 to 6 tree trunks, 18 inches and above in diameter, 20 feet or more in length, to be loosely arranged and stacked to provide additional cover for wildlife. And that mitigation planting in 1 and 2 above be warranted to be live and healthy for 2 growing seasons after planting, and that replacement of dead or stunted trees and shrubs be done at a 2-to-1 ratio following the second season. Discussion?
I guess the challenge is that most of the site is going to be occupied by the substation. So there doesn't remain much opportunity for creating wildlife habitat on the site with the enclosure and the access and the stormwater facilities that are going to be constructed on the site.
So again, we're constrained by which parts are under our purview.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
All right.
I think that because the parts and city limits are under your jurisdiction, it would have to be an adequate substitute for the trees to be held under your jurisdiction, so not an adequate substitute for all of the trees. I think that I don't have an answer on whether you could word a condition of approval that is broad enough that the applicant could decide what part of their property to comply with the condition of approval. I'm not sure that you're so limited as to saying that they have to be planted only on your property. I think we could require them to be planted outside city limits, but I think you could maybe provide flexibility on where they're planted. But in looking at the criteria and how they apply and what's an adequate substitute, you wouldn't be considering anything that's an adequate substitute for those trees that are not in city limits.
Right. So that's what I was imagining. It would be a smaller amount, but I feel like if we could say replacement of the trees that are lost under the jurisdiction that we have to cover, but it could be anywhere that they see, that they deem safe and appropriate on the site, the overall property that they have. I feel like that helps address some of it.
I agree.
So a lesser number than 100 trees, could we make a guess as to what we might consider? 40?
Well, this diagram up here is showing us about 20. And that may be realistic.
Well, I think there's a number of those below the hillside there, or on the steep slope there, that
so
would also be within our jurisdiction?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
50?
There are 28 trees proposed for removal from the portion inside the city limits. I count about 20 that are going to be replaced on the site, closer to maybe 19 or 20 that are going to be replaced. I guess it is 20. On the northwest portion of the site. However, there are other opportunities for some tree planting along the northeast edge of the site, next to the maintenance access road, interspersed with the other trees that are in the northwest corner, provide additional screening. There may be some low profile shrubs that can be planted along the north and the southern boundary of the property to provide some screening, additional screening, or like a vegetative screening of the compound. So,
but we could say plant the trees where we think they'd be most successful, whether it's that location or some other
correct
location not within our
yes
purview.
Yes,
that would be my preference, is to allow it to be placed in the hands of someone who knew the best spots for the trees. I also thought the shrubbery would be a good idea, and do I have any sort of support on that?
I would agree with that. I mean, something that you've got a fence around the outside of the thing anyway. I mean, if you can provide some natural screening, that's...
I wasn't thinking of it as screening. I was thinking of it as wildlife habitat.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of discussion in what we were reading about the instability of that hillside, and I don't know what you can do about that. You know, mm-hmm. And complaints about, are they using, you know, did somebody really go out and check and see how stable that is? You know, I don't know that we can really address that, because we have this tiny section, it looks like in the southeast corner, where you have some steep hill. And the rest of it's pretty flat. So I'd certainly support anything just because it makes it look more natural and looks more beautiful.
My one concern would be the word substitute. So since it would be the addition of something new,
mm-hmm.
I'm all for shrubs. And just looking at the specific wording of the criteria, I'm not sure if that would be a case that we can make through land use requirements.
Yeah.
We can urge the applicant, though.
Okay. Do we have a number we can come up to for tree, additional trees?
Besides the 20 that's kind of proposed up there?
Yes.
I sort of feel like we need to stay into the substitution. So if 28 from the area we get to discuss are being removed, I feel like we can only require 28 be replaced.
Okay.
And so they already have proposed 20. I would say we should put a condition of approval of a one-to-one substitute replacement. And as they are in the plan, is fine. The additional ones can go where it makes sense on their entire property.
Commissioner Vogt.
When we first began discussion on this, it was stated as to how many trees would remain, would not be removed. Is there a number on that? I mean, it isn't going to be a clear cut, so there are going to be trees that will not be removed. Is that
correct? Right. Even on this site, there are some
right
trees that are remaining, mostly
so, I mean,
in the western portion of the site.
I don't know what the number is anymore, because again, I mean, approximately, because I know that they were originally stating a percentage that would be removed, but I don't remember from last May what it was anymore. But it isn't a matter of starting from scratch with whatever is going to be replaced.
quick count, about 27 trees retained.
So it's about a 50-50 between the total. Thank you.
Okay, I'll propose a one-to-one replacement then. So in support of Commissioner Gill. So I guess that would be another 8 additional trees planted. And I'd say it wouldn't have to be in our site. It could be, it would make the most sense. Regarding traffic, I know that there was some condition or some worries about you know, what type of road we were on. I had an idea of having a go slow policy for the tree felling and for the construction in the area east of Henderson Avenue. So that I believe that that's an unimproved gravel road. Am I not?
It's paved.
Unimproved paved road. So I was wondering if there would be any support to have a kind of a go slow policy as a condition of approval for the tree removal and for the construction area.
Define the go slow policy, please.
I'd say, you know, 20 miles an hour through from Henderson Avenue to the east.
Oh, okay.
In and out. Okay, so a condition of approval, that would be...
Sure.
Yes?
Do we know what the posted speed is on that?
No, I don't. But generally, suggested construction is not actually a legal speed. So you can't generally put a legal restriction and ticket people for going faster through some construction zones. But so a go slow policy would just be something that was expressed to whatever contractors were and whatever sub-employees were going to use the road back and forth during the creation of the substation.
Legally, the way that a condition like that would work is that you would not get a speeding ticket if you exceeded the condition of approval. It could be, depending on if there were complaints, and if there was evidence to base the complaints on, not complying with a condition of approval on a permit, and for something like the tree felling permit, it would be a citation enforcement through municipal court for a civil violation, similar to if someone has too much trash on their property and they don't clean it up. It would likely be a little bit difficult to enforce as compared to a speeding ticket where you can have an officer report with radar.
Do we have ideas on that, general support?
Do they put a sign there or something and help people?
I don't think that we have any jurisdiction to require a sign to be put up because people would, we would only have ability to enforce that kind of condition on vehicles related to this development. So if you put a sign up that said construction vehicles can't go faster than 20 miles an hour, then it could convey someone who happens to be driving a construction vehicle on a public road that's the posted speed when it isn't. And so I think that just is outside of the Planning Commission's authority to. Give the impression that there's public
speed limits. I think another question is what portion of this access road is within the city and what portion is not?
Not a lot. Entrance.
Well, are you talking about
I was talking about speed? I was talking about 22nd Avenue.
Yeah, so I don't know whether 22nd Avenue is. It is city limits.
And I was thinking of it more as a restriction expressed to the contract. Not necessarily anything other than contract enforcement. So we would appreciate contractors going slow through this residential area on this unimproved road. So that concludes my conditions.
And to clarify, that'd be associated with the tree felling and the site plan?
That'd be associated through construction, the tree felling, and the
potentially two conditions, then one for the associated with the tree felling,
and then one for the site. One for the site.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
What's that great? I think on the tree felling, you're talking about criteria of 8, whether transportation of equipment in to and from trees from the site can be accomplished without major disturbance to nearby residents. I think that's the criteria you're mentioning. Point me out the criteria that you would put this under for the site plan.
I think you'd be looking under 5.17.125D, ingress egress points.
That's
safety of vehicles, traffic, and pedestrian safety,
and
avoid congestion.
Regarding the one point of ingress and egress, so I don't think you can require a speed on a roadway a substantial distance from the site.
Commissioner Fox.
Okay. My thought is if this is going to be an enforcement requirement to the contractor, it sounds like it'd be relatively toothless, because it's a difficult situation to try to ask a contractor to obey a speed limit and then enforce it as well.
It's actually easier than you might think.
Well, I mean, what?
Well, I mean, you can't enforce it legally through. You can't enforce it legally through a police act, but it can be enforced through the contract. Let's go with that.
But the contract's already been signed.
The contract is ongoing.
Well, nonetheless.
Work is ongoing through contract. So.
I don't think this particular suggestion is enforceable.
Trying to pull up the street.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did that. And there are residences on that.
No, I'm looking to see if there's any posted speed limits.
Anywhere, oh, okay.
So.
So I do think at least in regard to the tree felling, it's apparently is covered by the criteria, and I think it's a reasonable request to mitigate some of the impacts of the tree removal on the residents.
Yes.
Okay. It seems we have at least a majority consensus.
Could I ask a clarifying question back on the tree planting? Did you want to specify the size or type or location of the trees? I'm hearing that you wanted 8. I'm working on a draft.
Well, I was saying many more trees, very small, because a lot of them wouldn't survive. But instead, I think if we're requiring a certain caliber for the trees for that are being put in for the screening, I'd say let's go ahead and keep with that number, whatever that is.
I mean, you could require that they be still alive within a year or whatever like that, so that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, is there a minimum caliper that we usually have standing?
Typically 2 inches.
2-inch caliper.
Okay.
Street trees and for the parking lot and landscaping trees.
So 2-inch caliper trees. I've got eight of them. Do you want them to be still living after a year, or what do you want to do for that?
I think that they should, for certain, receive at least a 1 year warranty, one growing season. Be healthy and alive and growing after one growing season.
Was it just 8? I thought it was 28.
Well,
they already,
proposed
the 20, so you're adding 8 additional.
Okay, thank you.
So that it's a 1-for-1 replacement. Okay.
Okay, so 2 additional criteria of approval. Go slow policy for the tree felling and the additional 8 trees. Thank you. Do we have motion without further discussion?
Can we proceed with the 3 pieces here?
I think that we are ready for motions, unless there's further discussion.
I move.
Commissioner McGinley.
I move to adopt the order included as attachment 1 to the agenda item summary for case number 811-19-000102-TYP3 with the findings and responses attached to the order as Exhibit A, with the following changes, the conditions of approval laid out by Commissioner Cuebla.
Shall I read those? So what I have for the tree felling is to require 8 additional trees of 2-inch caliper be planted in addition to the 20 trees. Already proposed for planting. With a 1-year growing season warranty. Along with that, there would be changes to finding number 46. So that halfway down that finding, you would remove, there are no specific requirements in the tree felling criteria requiring a 1-for-1 tree replacement strategy. So instead of that, you would be saying a condition of approval is an adequate substitution of the trees to be felled requiring a 1-to-1 replacement strategy. Deleting the remainder of that sentence and then adding into the middle of the next sentence so that it would read, given the proposed development of the property for a substation and a transmission line, the applicant's proposed replanting of new trees and vegetation and as augmented by the condition of approval is an adequate substitution. Then for the go slow condition of approval, we have the applicant will require heavy vehicles associated with the removal will not exceed, associated with tree removal, will not exceed 20 miles per hour along East 22nd leading to the subject site. And there would be a change to finding.
From Henderson Avenue to the east.
From Henderson Avenue to the east?
Yes.
And there would be a corresponding change to the finding.
Finding 58. 58. To remove the last two sentences and to replace them with this additional sentences. However, additional truck and heavy vehicle traffic could impact residences along East 22nd. This impact can be mitigated by a condition of approval requiring construction vehicles to drive slowly at 20 miles per hour or less, period, as conditioned the application meets this criterion of approval.
Thank you. We have a motion from Commissioner McGinley. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second from Commissioner Bergen. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Do we have a motion for the hillside overlay? Commissioner Landon.
I move to adopt the order included as attachment 1 to the agenda item summary for case number 811-19-000128-TYP3 with the findings and responses attached to the order. Exhibit A.
Second. A motion by Commissioner Landon, second by Commissioner Bowes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Adopted. Do we have a motion on the site plan review? Commissioner Bowes.
Pertaining to the site plan review, I move that we vote to uphold the director's decision. Adopt the order included as attachment 1 to the agenda item summary for case number 811-19-000129-TYP3 with findings and responses attached to the order as Exhibit A.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, motion by Commissioner Vose, second by Commissioner Bergen.
No.
McGill, sorry. Mm-hmm.
Quick question on that. Correct me if I'm wrong, was there not? No, I was thinking that we had a change, a condition on that one. But we talked that through, correct? No condition. Thank you.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So that takes care of our third decision.
Moving on the agenda. We have a report of council action. Commissioner Landon.
We do. Last night, council had kind of our session that we had about the patrician and an awful lot of public input on that, some very strong feelings about that. Our commissioner here will be dealing with that in the future. Like our discussions, there was an awful lot of objection to people who felt that they had not been received a lot of notice, and people who felt that they were economically disadvantaged and didn't have choices. It's a very difficult issue. I think even more last night came out that property owner, even now, may not be telling people who are putting homes there that it's going away. There were some pretty strong feelings about that. So,
is there any other council actions during the night besides the patrician?
I don't think there was last night.
No. First reading.
It was just first reading on that.
Yeah, I was going to say that the record and the public hearing were both held open until the 16th of September.
Correct.
I was actually kind of surprised there was less testimony at the council meeting than there was at our hearings.
So, not much less.
Not much. Pretty efficient.
So let's see. Do we have any business report of council action?
Yeah. So I attended the work session on August 26th, where they were focusing on the transportation system plan updates. So that was something that was heard by the planning commission before. And they are, and City Council is now looking on it, working on it. A lot of it was around the transportation system around multi-unit properties. And so they're just working through that and making some additional decisions. They will continue to be working through that.
Mr. Lyon?
I also failed to mention that they did have a work session where they had five people interview for five museum committee open positions. A lot of interesting talent. It looks pretty good.
Great. Business from the Planning Commission. Go ahead, Mr. McGinn.
December 2nd in Portland, through the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association, will be a legal issues training workshop pertaining to land use. I can send out information if that's interesting to anybody. Oh, and Eugene is hosting the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association annual conference this year. It will be in late October. So that's something exciting that's happening, and there will be lots of sessions, including a counselor from the city of Minneapolis, the city just did something similar to House Bill 2001 that will be coming into effect in Oregon in 2022, but they basically allowed multi-unit dwellings throughout the city, so that will be something that's very interesting.
One other thing about the patrician hearing the other night, that the applicant brought forth some mapping that showed the entire site being duplexes and fourplexes according to the House Bill. Is it House Bill 2011?
2001.
So their concept, if it remains single family, would be to shoehorn it at the entire site as fourplexes. I'm not sure it's actually in the spirit of House Bill 2001, but it was certainly interesting to see. One other item I'd like to bring up is when we were at the meeting the other night, it actually was not Commissioner Landon's turn to be the representative at the City Council meeting, but we're very glad he attended, because the rest of us were just there for the actual meeting, didn't attend the work session. So I think from now on at our open meetings, I'm going to go ahead and announce who's responsible for the next meetings, kind of like what Brenda does and like Greg Mott used to do for us with the emails. So on the 9th, Commissioner Bowles,
is to attend. On the 16th, Commissioner McGinley is to attend, and on the 23rd, that'll be my job. And I'll keep you apprised from now on as an agenda. Thank you very much. Commissioner Bowles.
I have a background question. It was touched on briefly last night, but wasn't focused on tonight. The legislature's action, which either enabled or mandated, I don't know which, the theory that it's necessary to look at municipalities increasing housing densities and stating indirectly that we would wish to see multifamily units in areas where they previously weren't permitted. And I'm curious whether staff has had any discussions on this and whether there's a city approach to how to address this issue.
Sure. So at some point, it is my intent to come to the Planning Commission with an update on all of the legislative implications, but I don't have that ready yet. But in short, HB 2001 does require the city of our size to allow a duplex on any lot that we would allow a single family detached dwelling. And it also requires us to allow up to four units, the fourplex, so two triplexes, quadruplexes, and attached single family like townhomes in areas where we would allow single family residential. So Mark Rust is managing our code update, as you know, the development code update. And so he took to the governance committee a question as to whether we go forward on the time schedule that we have or wait for the state's model code, because it's one of the requirements of that House bill is for the Department of Land Conservation to come up with a model code. So if we would wait for that, the as I was not at that meeting, and I think some of you were, but my understanding is that the governance committee gave direction to move forward with the current timeline. So a couple things on that is that he will be having a work session with council on the 25th, I think it is, and then he'll be coming to you early in October with updates on the code update. And so you'll be able to talk more then and understand more what's happening with the code update relative to HB 2001. I'm going to be talking with council, I think it's the 16th, in work session on the planning work program in general and the legislation that has implications for us with that. So I'm working on preparing that now, so that I'm just calling that to your attention. And there are other requirements that relate to housing that we'll need to be addressing that I can get into more, but in a brief summary, it's kind of like they've set up a periodic review schedule for us again. I mean, used to be periodic review was required every so many years to update your comprehensive plans to make sure they're current. It became a very long and expensive process, and so the state has kind of ratcheted that back. And in a sense, this legislation has put back in a requirement that we maintain our buildable land supply and update that every 8 years, and the state is going to put a cycle together. So we'll schedule for that. So there's that aspect. There's a housing production strategy outside of your development code that you would need to use to ensure you're providing housing. So anyway, there's a fair amount that's involved in all of this, which we can get into at some point in the future. So did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
That might make a good training session.
Yes. That's my intent. I haven't fully absorbed all of the impacts of the legislation yet.
Sure.
So until I feel like I have a handle on it, I'm not ready to train anybody in that.
Well, I can just imagine if they're requiring a look at the housing supply or the housing availability every 8 years, I mean, that involves looking at the UGB situation.
Yes.
It took half of 8 years just to get the last cycle completed.
Yes.
So that's almost an ongoing situation then.
Yes. And I'm not anxious to get started on it. I think we have some other things that should happen first. And so anyway, we're, you know, we met with our representative from the Department of Land Conservation and Development, Patrick Wingard, whom you may remember. You know, I met with him last week to discuss some of this and the timing and what's going on in Salem, because they have to hire staff and do rulemaking for a lot of this, and it's still kind of evolving.
I know that there was a push in the past to decrease lot size, so it's going to be kind of interesting to, you know, to maximize the amount of lots you can get out of a particular subdivision, and it's going to be interesting to see how many existing lots actually will fit a fourplex legally, or whether they'll have to do boundary line adjustments or whatever to shoehorn a fourplex.
The legislation does allow reasonable siting and design standards. So if it doesn't fit and meet the design requirements or the siting requirements, then unless they make it really, you know, tiny. Mm-hmm. And we don't regulate size of units, but we would regulate, you know, lot coverage,
parking.
Setbacks. Parking is a factor.
Mm-hmm. Our next governance committee meeting is next week, Thursday, September 12th, from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m., and we'll be discussing housing issues. If it's an open meeting.
Do you know where the meeting is going to take place?
It says DPW 615.
Okay. Yeah, so that's down in our office.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what date was that again?
Next Thursday, September 12th. And it's from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. And then we have one scheduled in October. And that one is Wednesday, October 16th from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. in the Jesse Main Room. And again, all of those are open to the public.
Thank you.
Chair Quibble, I have a few more items under business from
Development and Public Works Department.
I can add on to some of what you all have brought up already. To add a little bit to what Commissioner Curry explained about the council meeting, the work session on the implementation of the transportation system plan. So the council did wrap up all of the alternatives that they are creating to the Planning Commission recommendation. So the next step for that is to schedule the first reading with the Lane County Board of Commissioners, and they'll have a work session with that, and then it would be a joint public hearing of the City Council and the board. So they are ready to start that hearing process with what the council had developed as an alternative. In some cases, there were some things that staff had identified subsequent to your recommendation that we also brought to council for consideration. So it will be somewhat different for both those reasons than what you had recommended. So there'll be opportunity for public to comment on what you had recommended as well as these alternatives. In terms of the Oregon chapter of the Planning Association, we are going to have a mobile workshop featuring here in Springfield the mill race. So getting people out there to see that and understand what all went into it and the benefits that it's providing to our community will be one of the sessions for that conference. And then finally, back to what your bulk of your meeting was on with the subs applications, is that I have not read the decisions yet, but the hearings officials did conditionally uphold the director's decision, and I think did add at least one condition, and Andy could maybe speak to it because I think he did read to, as Christina has, but did add at least one condition to one of them.
And I believe it was for the site plan review, and it was to for the applicant or to file a formal interpretation that high impact public facilities are allowable in the Glenwood Employment Mixed Use District. That was something that was seen as somewhat ambiguous. It was because it was not specifically excluded, it could be included. So formalizing that was seen as a way to formally acknowledge that this use is allowable, and it also would bolster, if this is appealed further, any LUBA appeal, recognizing that action has been taken by the city to do that. So that was the only condition of approval.
aside from those that were.
Question regarding the transportation system plan. My understanding, they dropped the street connectivity map, is that correct?
So they did, the alternative includes no local street network map. So the connectivity would only be made by applying the code language.
Thank you. Any further information or?
Can we circle back to reports?
Certainly.
Council reports, because I had a report from August 19th.
Oh, thanks.
I'd like to share. They had a couple of representatives from a couple of different sides of the forestation discussion, if you will. There was a gentleman from Cascadia Wildlands, and then a gentleman from the ONC Opportunity, Gabe and Chris, respectively, and they both had differing opinions on forest management. They had talked a lot about the Thurston Hills forest management up there, and that was a very lively discussion on that. And one of the things that I thought was interesting, moving on to one of the next topics, was the city prosecutor came and spoke. This was all in a work session. We didn't have council action that night. And he had mentioned discussing courtroom security, what that looks like, if that means we will increase courtroom security. He did mention that because of the jail in Springfield, arrests are down, but thinks that due to the morning he had that day, arrests in 2019 might be up. Arrests in 2018 were down, which was wonderful. He mentioned that mental health cases are going up every year, and that seems to not just be a Springfield-specific issue. That's something that we're dealing with nationwide. And so they're wanting to look into see why is it going up, and what can we do to help with that. Then again, they talked about, or he talked about, excuse me, body cams, and talking about if that's something we have, we being the police, if they have that in the budget, if that's something that we want to move forward with, is it beneficial to the public, is it beneficial to the police, and whatnot. And then had talked about a victim services grant, which is a federal grant that he discovered that grant writing is more difficult than he thought. But with this grant, it would allow us to have a representative for victim services. And that was the long and the short of that August 19th meeting.
Thank you. Any further information, Chair? Hearing none, we'll adjourn.